This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri from Arizona, back to visit her old hometown, Geraldine Connolly. She's here, and she was with us early on, and she just come back to say hello. And here she is with an opening poem.
Buckeye. The buckeye is a symbolic tree in Pennsylvania, where I grew up. In the woods, below the road, I like to sit on the end of the branch of the buckeye tree. Scratchy, hard to get to, full of knots and twigs and burls. I smelled the soft moss, watched the bubbling creek, and heard the shouts of boys riding their bikes, a rabbit rustling in the ferns. I was happy to be alone, to hold the spiky chestnut grenade, polished as a mahogany piano, clean and smooth with no cracks. To be away from the scolds of adults, to live in the silence of leaves, the solemn eye of the fruit, peeling its skin back to a white core of heart, above a jungle of weeds, beneath a low branch, far from drunken Hans and egg gathering and Sunday prayers. Even now I can smell grass growing and leaves turning rusty, and know I can summon a train whistle's lonely shriek or the tap of a woodpecker's beak against bark.
So Geraldine Connolly is reading about her Western Pennsylvania roots, and her poetry comes from a new book. And what is the title of that book?
Aileron.
And what does that mean?
Aileron, and aileron is a French word for the hinge on the wing of an aircraft that keeps the airplane in balance. So the theme of balance in the book is very important, because our family farm in Pennsylvania sadly was sold for energy development and sold without my knowledge, and the event split our family in two.
Oh.
So I'm looking to find emotional balance by exploring this theme, and trying to stay aloft became an important issue to explore in the poetry.
So in this book, there's much about flight, there's much about balance, there's much about actually, there's much about your equipoise. And
yes,
it's all about your balance and juggling all of these different emotions and experiences. So read us another poem. Geraldine Connolly is here, and I'm Grace Cavalieri, and this is The Poet and the Poem.
Okay. I will next read a poem called Legacy. Legacy is another important theme in the book. There's the legacy of the family we were born into, but then the legacy of what we pass on to our family. Legacy. They covered my mother's farm with drilling rigs, knocking down the house like a stack of blocks. So we must live now without the hayfield and the creek, without the silo, the corn crib, the orchard, the creek bed. We will breathe the summery air only in dreams, where we make soup with water and bits of stone. Slash the onions into slivers of regret. A plume of smoke rises grimly from the barn, since someone has forgotten to latch the gate. A thief has entered the garden, grabbing the carrots, ripping onions from their beds, while we watch from our distant dwelling, dreaming the past still exists, floating on its raft of broken bread. That's the end of the poem.
It seems that your mother's farm and the loss of it has been actually a traumatic event.
Yes, I felt a great sense of grief because I loved the farm, the creek, the silo, the farmhouse, the ruined stones of the spring.
And they had no choice in its demise?
My sister, who had taken ownership, sold it to an energy development company.
And that's another poem.
Yes, right.
And Geraldine Connolly is here. There's a lot of family in her book. There is a lot of tradition, and the family is very, very important to you. How do you weave it into literature?
Well, I always think of myself as a narrative poet, and I have to continue the story of my family. My immigrant ancestors came over from Poland and from Wales and from Germany, and they all had farms in the New World. And I always wanted to tell the story of my family in my early books, discovering my roots, my connections to them, and then telling the story of the family that I created, my husband and my children. And this new theme called to me when I felt this great sense of grief over the tragedy of losing the farm. And I wrote this one poem, for instance, called Seckle Pear. I saw it as a way to remember the beauty out of something tragic. So I found that poetry saved me when I was able to write about these painful losses. So here's one called Seckle Pear. Oh, buttery sweetness, slope of musky pleasure, the tongue's preoccupation. There's nothing like it in the world, nothing like its smoky shadow traveling the knotted branch. Nothing falls with such a slow, spiraled thud into the wet blades, or curves with such elegant promise among cow hoofs and crow feathers. Before the worms advance, nothing glows with such sugary flesh or sleeps so intent and diligent in its soundless bed. Fini. So the sad truth is now all of that's gone. It'll never be available again, and I wanted to remember it. That was the impetus for many of the poems in the book.
That is true, yes. And how does flight enter into your world?
Well, I wanted to fly above the tragedy, to somehow make sense of it by flying with words and discoveries. And I didn't realize that I was doing it until I went back and looked at all of the poems that I had gathered, and I saw the images of wings and birds and flying everywhere in the book. So I realized that staying in balance and navigating through life's difficulty was one of the important themes.
It is. This is Geraldine Connolly. How do you describe your present work as compared to your other work? You have had 4 books. You've had a distinguished career. I would just like people to know a little bit about who you are. We are talking about your present book, and a previous one was Food for the Winter. That was Purdue. Province of Fire was Iris Press. Hand of the Wind was Irish. And you have The Red Room, Heatherstone Press. You've had 2 NEA grants, a Maryland Arts Council Fellowship, a Yeats Society of New York Poetry Prize. You were the Margaret Bridgman Fellow at Breadloaf. You have had a rich, rich career, and you are nationally known. Now, when you look at your earlier work, how do you feel it compares to your present work? I know the themes are somewhat similar, but what has happened to you that makes you go deeper and truer, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. I did deal with some family issues in my very first book, Food for the Winter, which remembered my immigrant ancestors. And then my second book, I wrote a lot about boarding school, going to Catholic boarding school,
yes,
and the drama of spending 4 tortured and unhappy years.
That's a terrific book.
There. So I think I have a rebellious spirit. I was actually in trouble a lot as a child, and I wrote my first poem when I was thrown out of math class in high school, and they sent me to the library. Little did they know they were sending me to Nirvana. And there I wrote my first poem, which I entered in a contest and I won a trophy. I won the first.
What was the title?
Me.
Oh my, how self-absorbed.
Right, it was about teenage angst, you know.
Of course.
And the drama of finding myself, you know, I was a black dot in a white sea, I was a cracked vase, etc. All these images.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And then the last line is, out of the tangled weeds and abyss. I want to find me. So I won a trophy for poetry. I took that unfortunate experience that I had by being thrown out of class, you know, which is embarrassing, and I was being punished, and I tried to turn it into something beautiful, something that would last.
And what did you do with 4 years of Catholic boarding school? You got a great book out of it.
I got a great book out of it. So I think that out of the chaotic mess of life, we can find some things that make sense by looking at our emotions and writing about them. So poetry has saved me.
Yes, it saved. Hasn't it saved us all? Yes. Do you think your craft is different? Do you think your tone is different? Do you think you're digging deeper? Do you think that you're changing with maturity?
I hope so. I think I'm writing more meditative poems. And I've always loved being outdoors. I'm very affected by being outside. And I have a great appreciation for nature and what it teaches us. And since I've had these new landscapes in Montana and in Arizona, I've tried to use the landscapes, the animals, the plants, to do meditative poems. I also wrote one collage poem, which I would like to read, too.
Good. Well, hear that. You know, Mark Strand was from Newfoundland, uh-huh. and he talked about the blues and grays in the tones. And then he moved to Utah, and that changed his poetry drastically. So I thought that might have happened to you.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And how do we read a collage poem and know that it's a collage poem?
Well, I think when you look at it on the page, it looks differently. It doesn't have stanzas. It's just one line followed by an asterisk, followed by another line, followed by an asterisk. There's a lot of open space.
And how do we hear that?
How do we hear it? Probably just a pause, and then there's sometimes a new thought, a new revelation each time that I see an asterisk. I'm going somewhere new and different. This one is called Scar Almanac. For a while, I thought about how life is an accumulation of scars, and that's something that you get with a lot of writing and a lot of aging and experience. So here's a meditation on that. Scar Almanac. The scar is the memory of the wound. If the scar spoke, she would have a beautiful voice. The skin waits for the scar, like the geisha waits for her lover. The scar is a mirror, a montage, a village of shadows. If the scar serves a purpose, let it remain. Some people are so tame, they don't even have a single scar. A man without a scar, says Plutarch, will undertake to become a general. A row of scars is the route to originality. We grew and grew them like pomegranates, like apricots. All the scars, like burning roses, like cartwheels turn in the dusty air. My metaphors are my wounds, wrote Nellie Sachs. If the scar serves a purpose, let it remain. To dream of scars is to dream of premonitions. Blister, cicatrice, brand, slash. A scar is a deformity and a sign of ownership. When Rappaccini's daughter lost her birthmark, she lost her identity. The ladder of years is a ladder of scars. I was crazy for you. And your departure left a scar. The scar is a great ornament, not easy to wear, brought by the arrow of love, a guest. All night, the scars sang their lonely songs. The dogwood holds its scars like medals. Because I love you, I will leave my scar along your back. After war scarred the earth, each new war began. So that's very different.
Oh, Jerry, I love that poem. I love, love, love that interior. It's an extended metaphor, But each one of those lines is a whole poem in itself. I really like where you're going.
Thank you very much. I tried to change the voice and the tone a little in each line.
Each line I would meditate into. And that's why it is you're on to something new, really, because this is a rich philosophical dimension that was subtle in your work, but now you're just coming out and declaring your interior life.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, Geraldine Conway. We knew her as Geri 40 years ago, maybe, and she's come back to say hello to Washington, D.C. And reading new work, what is this manuscript going to be called, I wonder?
Oh, I don't have enough poems yet to know about it. I really have to have maybe 15 or 20 poems to start to see the themes and images that are reappearing. One other thing I've been writing about more than I did when I was younger is about being a female. And I wrote a poem.
We're just beginning to see how significant we were.
Really, it's true. So I wrote this imitation, this homage to Pablo Neruda, who wrote about being tired of being a man.
Oh.
So this one's called Being a Female. I am sick of my hair and my lipstick, my mascara and my eyeliner. So tired of my eyes, tired of my breasts and my unspoken comments. Tired of my small footprints and the bandage over my mouth. I am tired of men repeating my remarks, pretending they were theirs. I don't want to be a calf shut in a stall waiting for slaughter, or a petroglyph smothered in a slab of granite. It would be exciting to stab a shoe salesman or paralyze a makeup artist. It would be marvelous to ride down Main Street on an Arabian stallion in a fringe jacket and cowboy hat, opening my shirt for the world to see. In the faint corners of photographs, there I am, hidden in shadows, stirring a pot, holding a small, screaming baby, as birds fly out from the trees like desperados. From now on, I refuse to be a frail flower, a petrified blossom, a rug that everyone treads upon, lying still and miserable, waiting for the next heel print. I will grow smaller and smaller, a hyphen, an afterthought, a piece of lint fallen behind a pillow. A woman who is no longer a female, finally erased.
Now I see why you were thrown out of math class. I mean it. But you have really staked your claim there. And I like it. And it's true. Because in our generation, we really were raised to be obedient.
Absolutely.
And we were allowed to achieve, excel, and obey. And they did not even know we had emotions because that wasn't interesting enough. I mean, it was really, people do not understand that we're not born at the first part of the 20th century, how different things are. And I have four daughters, so I think their attitude to life was very different. Good for you for writing that and more of it.
Things have changed, that's for sure, and I've always wanted to write a political poem, so I think that qualifies. It was about the burden of being a female, but I suppose it's also equally hard to be a man.
I do too. We have to feel sorry for them. They have to put on those ties and act strong. So you have been teaching at the Writers' Center when I knew you, and you taught in Montana and Arizona?
No, I've been teaching in Arizona. There's a wonderful poetry center there that was built about 10 years ago, and it has an incredible library and classrooms, and lots of poets, national poets, come through.
And you have readings?
We have readings, and I've taught community workshops there, which have been wonderful. I've really enjoyed it. I've taught a few times at Chautauqua in the summer up in New York State.
Oh, yes, uh-huh. And what is the first thing you do when you walk into a room and here are your students, your community individuals, and you walk in, and you know you have to make them love what they're going to do, and you have to make them not afraid. What's the first assignment you give?
Well, first of all, I ask them each to tell about themselves, because I think that then when they tell me about their background a little bit, I can understand them a little bit. And I usually have them write poems to examples of poems that I'm very excited about, whether it be a list poem, for instance, something that I give them some examples of, and then I explain how different poets have achieved it, and then I try to instruct them to follow the model.
Yes.
But I make the instructions very clear, and then I try to be very respectful of their backgrounds, because I think they're nervous about starting over as a poet after having finished a career, possibly being retired. So I try to make things very clear to them. I encourage them to use particular concrete details and then have an idea of a tone or an attitude towards their subject.
And are they happy with the outcome?
Oh, yes. We have a wonderful time. And then I've just found out about Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, which is a group of people who get together and they have classrooms.
Oh,
and
yes, I do know about that. We have it here. And are you going to teach there?
Yes, I'm planning to do that next.
Uh-huh. Tell us just quickly what that is.
Well, it's just a group of retired people who decide they want to study a certain subject, and they get together, and then someone facilitates, but there's a lot of student input.
I think it's a volunteer position.
Yes,
yes.
That's correct.
And I know authorities, for instance, the Emily Dickinson Scholar is teaching one, and Frost's granddaughter is teaching Frost, mm-hmm. and this is all just a contribution.
Yes, it's wonderful that these options are available for retired people to continue learning.
Geraldine Connolly is here, and she has been given many, many awards. Her work has appeared in Poetry Magazine, The Georgia Review, Shenandoah. She's been featured on the Writer's Almanac and anthologized in Billy Collins' Poetry 180. What poem was that? Do you remember that he...
The Summer I Was 16.
Oh, great.
It's about...
Because 180 is in the high school classrooms.
Yes, I've gotten a lot of letters and emails from students. The art school in South Carolina called.
I wonder how he found that poem.
How he found that poem? Possibly when we had the Plum Writers Retreat up in West Virginia, and he was one of our speakers 1 year, and he saw a copy of it
there.
That's
terrific. Let us hear another poem.
One other theme, I told you, was being female, but a way to get, and then there are the poems about the farm and the loss of the farm and then the grief.
In your book.
Yes, in Aileron, the new book. But I also wanted to get away from the sadness to heal. And one thing that I find very healing is having granddaughters. I have 4 granddaughters. And this one was written to the first granddaughter.
Are they from your daughter?
3 from my son, 1 from my daughter. 3 live in Utah, 1 lives in San Francisco. This is the firstborn granddaughter, my granddaughter's face. When I stare at that strange, ethereal flower, I wonder how she chose my daughter's body for her entry into this world. She could have been a monkey or a hummingbird, could have chosen the rainforest or a volcanic island for her home. I watch her cornflower eyes, mysterious eyelashes, trace the contour of her face, shaped like my husband's, with his high forehead and alert gaze. Gardeners dream of a flower like you, Adela, unfolding before them, a creamy, heart-shaped blossom, uttering bird-like syllables. The features of our ancestors are filigreed on your skin.
You know, I'm always happy when we take a topic of grandchildren or mother and raise it above the level of Hallmark so that it becomes a true poem. And that is a contribution because it is so, we're proliferated with sentimentality. But to take the love of a family member and to write a genuine work of literature, that I appreciate.
That was my hope. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm writing about aging, too. That's another theme in Aileron. So I wrote this ode to my lost quickness. The thing about aging is you don't have to really do anything about it. It just happens. But this is an ode to lost quickness. Once I was as quick as a wink, a flea on a hot griddle, a flash of flesh, speeding through a small town on a hummingbird's whir. If you closed your door, I'd already be inside counting the seconds. People mistook me for a lightning strike, a flicker's leap, a minnow's flashing tail. Quickness, not all it's said to be. Now I'm glad to be slow as reeds under a pond. Now I hold my tongue. I take my time and ponder. I deal with what I have. No longer the swiftness of a wing through air. I am amber inside a rock, a little something born to disappear.
Geraldine, do you believe that? That you're slower?
Yes, I do. A little slower.
I don't see it.
I had some coffee this morning, but it made a good poem. Sometimes we dramatize things, right?
Geraldine Connolly, I finally believe you've moved west. And we will now have a final poem.
I talked about staying in balance as being the most important theme in this book. So I'm a Libra, someone who vacillates emotionally, intellectually, but this one is about being out of balance. The scales of Libra can veer, sometimes laden, sometimes filled with air. My days swing in circles from giddiness to despair. I flutter, I vow. I bend softly, then burst with prickles. As soon as dread has gone, I'm all ecstasy. What I can count on is vacillation. I tilt and swerve. I fly toward a sky that spins and tumbles. I hop across stepping stones, moving on a lava flow. I fumble. My crib was lined with slippery sheets. Even my deathbed will shake with indecision, my body wanting to slide into its soft nest, yet leap out, ride the animal to the finish.
That is the voice of Geraldine Connolly, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. This program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Winterbinner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation, with additional support from the CINAPID Fund. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.